Welcome. You are listening to the Retirement Lifestyle Show with Roshan Lungani, Eric Olson, and Adrian Nicholson. This show is an exploration of ideas to help you work toward your ideal retirement. Get ready for the financial independence of your dreams.
Welcome to the Retirement Lifestyle Show. I'm your co-host, Roshan Lungani, here with Adrian Nicholson. Adrian, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Excited to be here. Looking forward to our topic today. It's going to be a good one, one I think we really haven't touched on recently or before. So happy to be here and looking forward to it. Roshan, how are you?
Doing great. I'm excited about this one as well. Everything's going well. Kids are getting ready for Halloween coming up in a couple weeks. So yeah, things are great. Today we're going to talk about a book called What I Learned Losing $1 Million by Jim Paul and Brendan Moynihan. We picked this up and I think it was a good read. I should say a good listen, since I actually listened to the audiobook versus reading the book. And I would recommend it. The concept is that Jim Paul, the author, was trading futures and he lost a lot of money. You know, the title says What I Lost Losing $1 Million. He ended up losing, I think it was over $800,000. He had to borrow money for margin calls, which he did. He eventually lost his job because of this. And then he goes on a quest to try to find, you know, what works well with investing. And he discovers that he had said there are as many ways to make money as there are people in the markets. So instead of focusing on the best ways to make money, he shifted his focus on ways to avoid loss. So Adrian and I are going to discuss, we're going to spend most of our time talking about the last chapter, the rules of investing. The chapter title that he has on here is Rules, Tools, and Fools. And he starts it with a quote that says, a fool must now and then be right by chance, by William Cowper. So Adrian, let's start us off in that chapter. For everyone listening, actually, Adrian, before you start us off, we always try to give you stuff that's actionable and that you can use. So we're hoping by highlighting this chapter, you'll be able to become a better investor. And he talks about other types of market participants, whichever you'd like. We're hoping that we can share some information with you that will help you improve what you're doing. So Adrian, why don't you start us off with chapter 9 and some of your takeaways?
Yeah, I'd be happy to, Roshan. And I like how the chapter starts off with them addressing how they're breaking the rules. And I think that's something that is worth having a discussion, because when you think about breaking the rules, it's really a negative connotation. You think that's something bad. But in this case, it's talking about breaking an investment strategy, a plan, breaking that rule and actually making money, being profitable. But what I think they're really trying to point out is, yes, you can break a rule and be profitable, but over time that could compound losses and something very bad could happen. So yes, there's times where breaking the rules could be favorable, but it could also lead to something detrimental and cause a loss to somebody. So I think that might be a good place to start out.
Yeah, and you can make an investment. Adrian, give me one moment. Let me come back to that, because I do want to define one thing. The first thing he says with his establishing rules is decide what type of participant you want to be. Whether you're an investor that's a long-term investor, he defines as someone with, you expect an adequate return. It could be dividends, it could be interest, but you have a long-term time horizon. A speculator is buying for resale. So you're buying because you expect the position to make you money. You're not staying there for the long term. You're not going to collect dividends and interest. You'll be there more of a short-term participant. And then he says a gambler is someone who wagers money on an outcome of a game. And oftentimes they'll do it for excitement. And I think a good analogy here is people will go to the casino. They'll lose some money and they'll say, okay, that's fine. It was the cost of entertainment, right? Versus, you know, compared to going to a movie or going to a show. So Adrian, your point of when you started off this chapter and you had said that if you break the rules, you'll eventually lose money. I think that you've got to look at what type of participant are you first. And I know that he's using this as the intro, but breaking the rules can get you lucky, but it'll hurt in the long run. As that quote says, a fool must now and then be right by chance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point that you brought up as well. And ultimately, he does list out like just the different type of participants. Like you mentioned, there's gamblers, speculators. One of them is an engineer. I think that's just something too. And they're not necessarily one's better than the other, but really drawing out what it entails and what it means and what it goes behind it. And ultimately, what they're trying to drive home, I believe, in this chapter is the importance of a plan and the decision-making process. And they line out five steps that come into the decision-making process. And you touched on the first one, decide what type of participant you're going to be. The second one is select a method of analysis. The third is develop a rules. Fourth is establish controls. And then the fifth one is formulate a plan.
Yeah, and that market participant is one that I think that first step that's more important than it initially seems, because what you've got to do when you determine what type of market participant you are, it will tell you if your behavior is in line or not in line. So and he uses investor, speculator, and gambler as some of them. He's used trader and better in earlier chapter as well. But you've got to know what you are. So for example, if you decide you're a long-term investor, and then you, meaning you're going to buy and hold for the long time, you're going to collect dividends and income, and then you see a stock price drop, not one that you're following, just another, or let me say it differently, using his comparison, he lost his money using soybean oil futures, right? So let's say you're an investor and then all of a sudden there's a drought and you're saying, oh, well, now I'm going to go buy soybean oils based on the drought out there. Well, you're then acting more like a speculator or a gambler because you're essentially betting on rain and what happened. So I think when you define where you are early, it'll help you stick to those rules. So I know this is a shorter part of the section, but I think this is definitely an important part. And for everyone listening, I think it's easy for you to define what you are before you move forward, and take into account not what you think you are, but take into account your actions. Are you someone who's typically jumping in and out of stocks or a certain stock frequently? That's more speculator behavior than investor. So if you say, hey, I'm an investor, but you're really trading in and out, that's more speculator behavior. I'm not saying one is better or worse. I'm just saying that know what you would like to be, also know what you are, and make sure you can stick to that plan.
Mm-hmm. And then to just add on that as well, once you sort of define where you are or who you are, whatever it may be, I think then comes the plan, the decision-making process. And one thing that they highlight as well is setting controls. And I think they define the successful investor versus the unsuccessful investor as how well you're able to follow that plan. How well are you able to follow that strategy? Are you going to go along with the controls if they are hit or breached, whatever it may be? Because something that I think is worth noting is if you break those rules, like we mentioned in the beginning, it becomes very personal. And one thing that a word that keeps being brought up here is that your ego starts to get involved. And with that comes emotion and maybe reasoning and all that, like I mentioned before, can lead to losses. Maybe not in the beginning, but it can compound and happen. So that's something too that I think is worth discussing as well. Just the ego aspect and breaking your rules, and the importance is just having a plan in place and just maybe being a little bit robotic about it and just trying to be as objective as possible.
And, you know, once you define this, it also makes your job easier in the sense that you can know what not to look into. And Adrian, when you mentioned taking the losses, I think that there's one sentence in the book where he says, acknowledging that losses are part of the business are one thing, but taking and accepting those losses in the markets are something else entirely. This is one there's an old joke, and I've actually mentioned this on a previous podcast. So Adrian, you may remember it, but I'll try it on you anyway. What's a long-term investment?
A long-term investment is just allocating capital to just make profit, but it's not funny. So I'm sure the answer.
Yeah. So the joke is a long-term investment is a short-term investment that lost money.
That's a good one, but I got a better joke. And this is coming from the chapter where it's saying, once you follow the rules, the guides, the strategy that you have, it should be very boring to follow it. And that should be good in this instance when necessarily boring doesn't sound fun. Unless you're that gambler, you're looking for entertainment, they define that. If you're not and you're more of the investor, the long-term, the engineer that they talked about, and you're following your plans and strategies, this should be boring, just following your criteria and waiting for those certain controls to be breached or not.
Yeah, and yeah, that is something that's consistent. You know, the greats, Buffett and Munger, always talk about simple, boring businesses. There was one book previously. I may or may not be giving credit to the right person, but I believe it was Guy Spier who said if he had someone start in the business for the first year, he'd have them stare at the wall. And the lesson there is that you're not actually taking a lot of action all the time. The hard work is in finding the investment and in sort of the chase of the right investment. But then once you find it, you've just got to hold on to it. Munger has another quote that I like where he says that that the money isn't made in the waiting, something to that effect, that you do your research and find the investment. And I found the quote, the big money is not in the buying and the selling, but in the waiting. So that's another one that applies here. Let's go on to his second step. So the first step was define what participant you'd want to be. And as I said, define what you want to be and then review your behavior to see what you are. And I think you need to find consistency there. What I mean by that is that if you've defined you want to be X, but your behavior is Y, you've got to determine, are you going to change your behavior to line up with X, or are you going to change your participant status to line up with Y, whatever that behavior is. The next step he's got is select a method of analysis. Fundamental analysis or technical analysis are just two I pointed out. Fundamentals are where you're looking and analyzing the business. What's the ratios, like what's the price to earning ratio, what's the price to book ratio is what you'll look at with fundamental analysis.
Mm-hmm. And then they point technical out analysis. That analysis simply is that. Mm-hmm. It's analysis. It doesn't really tell you what to do or when to do it. That's something else that is worth pointing out.
Exactly. That's a great point. That's the next step. So fundamental analysis, as I mentioned, is looking at the ratios. Technical analysis, you're typically looking at price movement. And there are, in each of these categories, fundamental versus technical, there are subcategories of various factors you'll make in making your decisions. But as Adrian just said, analysis is simply analysis. It will not tell you what to do. And it's even worth pointing out, data is just information. You then analyze that. That's your analysis. But then neither of them will tell you what to do. They can be used as a guide. And the next step, step three, is you've got to develop your rules. So you've got your analysis and you've got to develop those rules. So just for example, with the fundamental analysis side, you might say, I want to buy a stock when it hits a certain PE ratio or with a certain return on capital. And then you've just got to wait till your criteria is met. Technical analysis, you might say, I'm going to buy when it goes above a certain moving average. But once again, you're just waiting until your criteria is met, which, Adrian, to your point, is where it can get aware. It can get boring, or where you should get good at being bored. A couple other points on developing the rules that I pulled out, and then Adrian, please chime in with any that you have. But one is only act when your rules are met. I feel like I mentioned that. A very good one I liked on there is you need your rules and you need to set your rules and establish your controls and formulate your plan, which are the next two steps. Establish controls for your formulate your plan. But you've got to do all this before you enter the position. And the only time you're actually objective is before you have either before you've either decided to buy in to the stock. So once you've bought in, your mind, and Adrian, you had mentioned this earlier, your ego, we're talking about behavioral finance now, starts focusing on confirming what your thinking is versus objectively looking at the information. So what I mean by that is before you buy the stock, you might be looking at information for should you buy or not. Once you buy the stock, whether it's conscious or unconscious, you're looking for information to confirm your decision as opposed to looking at it from the objective perspective. So let's go on. Once you've developed your rules, and this is where I think if you're listening right now and you're working on these items, I think step one of determining what participant you'll be and selecting a method of analysis, I think you can probably accomplish that relatively quickly. Developing your rules, I think, is where you're going to spend a lot of time in advance. So what types of companies will you look at if you're on the fundamental side? What type of price movement are you going to look at if you're on the technical side? And really write down and implement, write down those rules that you want to develop. And then next is establish controls. Adrian, why don't you take us through that one?
Yeah, this is a good one as well, because again, this is just one aspect that goes into scenario planning where you really see, I mean, you can't predict what outcome is going to happen, but you put in certain controls, certain metrics, certain, they call them events as well. If it was to happen, this will cause you to take action. I think this is important too, because they said, try and do this before you entry. So having this, and like you said, putting the pen and paper, having these certain controls, these rules put in, seeing how much you're willing to lose, is sometimes more important than thinking about how much can I really make off this investment? How much can I make off of this trade as well? Where you run scenario A, you run scenario B, you run scenario C, and just try and take anything that you can into account that can really help your plan see what outcomes can happen. So having these scenario plans, these different outcomes, and seeing how much loss you can take is something beneficial when it comes to making this strategy or this plan.
Yes, and when he talks about controls, he one of the examples he uses is that exit criteria. How do you automatically pull out of a position? And this is something that's to protect your downside risk. And he says later on in the book that one of the best trades he ever made was he had put in an order for gold to go down. And he then had to leave to finish his taxes. So he told a colleague, he put a stop order in. You know, if it goes up to a certain amount, it'll sell automatically. He ends up losing $800 on that trade. But he said the only reason he let the limit go through is because he was too embarrassed to go to the colleague and say he changed his mind and not to let the order in. But it followed his rules by accident at that point. But the exit criteria, and this is an interesting one, I'll tell you for me, because he says you've got to develop a stop loss. And Adrian, as you mentioned, how much are you willing to lose on the position? I don't know that for my strategy, actually having an automatic stop loss would be the way to go. And starting at the top of his rules, I'm looking at and being an investor, so investing for the long term. My method of analysis is fundamentals. I'm looking for what I've classified as good businesses at a good price, meaning that the good business based on how the company's future historical and expected future growth prospects are, and the good price, I'll look at the value of the business and I'll look at a variety of valuation ratios. I'm bringing all that up during the controls section because if a business has met my criteria and I want to invest in this business and the value of the stock goes down, now let's assume nothing's fundamentally changed. It's just the price has gone down. I don't want to necessarily sell automatically. Now, the way I would take the stop loss order or establish controls is I'd say if the price drops below X, I need to revisit all my analysis and research and see what could I have done wrong. What's the market saying that I'm not saying that about the price, and then I've got to determine how whether I believe that this is going to continue and there was something flawed in my analysis, or whether I think this is just market fluctuations. So now for the speculator, the trader using technical analysis, I do think stop losses are a very valuable piece. For everyone listening, when you come to this point, you know, you've determined what you are as a participant, your analysis and your rules. I think that that's the point where you've got to determine if a controls for you means having an automatic stop loss. In a tax-free world where, you know, you're not getting taxed for those transactions, I think the value of a stop loss would be you've got to make an active decision. Even on the fundamental side, if let's say it sells automatically at price X, and you want to revisit your research, well, I think it's different to say, yes, I want to hold on to this position versus saying, yes, I want to buy again. I think psychologically, that's a different decision. So I can see some value in it, but I think you've got to determine whether that works for your strategy and determine what other controls you've had. As I mentioned on my end, that control is needing to revisit my full analysis. So I would stop analyzing whatever company I am, and I would want to start looking at this one from scratch after this price has gone down to determine if I want to still hold or still believe what I originally did.
Yes, I agree with that. And analogy too that I think is a good one too is treating it sometimes like a game, because whether it's a long-term perspective that you have or timeline or short-term one, the reason why I'm bringing up the analogy as a game is because games have a set of rules, certain limits, certain time frames. They're not just ongoing. And I think this may be the other side of it as well. If you just think about just being a long-term investor, just buying and holding and just reaping in those profits and returns over time, that's great. But seeing it as a game with rules, controls, a beginning, and an end can sometimes be beneficial because, again, when you think about a game, you can't break the rules because there are consequences. There are certain things that you have to go by and follow. And this could help somebody be a successful trader, an investor, speculator, better, whatever it may be, by just trying to contain themselves with certain criteria. Because like I mentioned before, it keeps out your ego, it keeps out emotions, which you can't really do in a game because, again, you have to be very objective and follow a certain formula. So thinking of it as a game as well is one way for you to set up controls and rules and help you follow that in order to keep yourself from just breaking that and doing something else. So that's one way to look at it as well from a different perspective.
Yeah, I think that's another helpful, very helpful point. Viewing it as a game might not make you as prone to loss aversion, which is the fear of realizing a loss. Another thing that was mentioned on there that can help with this. So we're going over the establishing control section and taking losses as you have to, accepting that taking losses are part of the investing world. And Adrian just mentioned that viewing it as a game might help you do that. It just reminds me of a client I recently met with who I wanted to sell one of his bonds that were losing money and put it into a different position that we thought would make money. And his response was, I'd rather wait and hold this bond until it recovers versus going into something else that we think will go up. And then we sort of went back and forth where I had said, well, I think you'll recover your money faster with this versus keeping what you have. We did come to a conclusion that I think would be helpful for those listening we sold part of the position, and we're going to revisit it in a few months and to finalize it. I think sometimes selling part of the position, even if it's small, will let you know how you feel, whether that was the right decision or not. If you feel a sense of relief selling a part of the position, maybe you're going down the path you would be. So that's just another tip on trying to manage loss aversion and have some established controls, because your control could be, if it drops by X, I lower my position by a certain amount. But once again, that's not going to work for everyone. And I'll just use myself as an example. I think as more of a fundamental, a long-term investor, that's not exactly what would be right for me. But if you're a speculator using technical analysis, I think that could be right for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, really good example. And again, just hammering the point that it's just so important to have that plan and strategy, and it will help you just be methodical and keep out any other variables, because when it comes to investing, trading, whatever it may be, there's just a lot of variables, a lot of different outcomes, just a lot of scenarios that you have to, that you really just can't expect, and there's just a lot of uncertainty out there. So having a plan really keeps you methodical. Rules, controls can help protect you from loss. And one thing that they are mentioning is, if you really don't have a plan, again, sometimes you can just go through this constant cycle of just different stages they talk about. You experience different type of markets. You just go through this endless cycle of a range of emotion, different events that you can really ultimately avoid if you have a plan and strategy that can just take that away and just go on to something new. They basically mentioned just skipping the five stages of grief, just going straight into acceptance and move on to your next plan, your next strategy. So that's something else that's just worth noting, just to help you when it comes to just dealing with uncertainty, because that's a lot of the big things that can cause some issues and some losses.
Yeah. And then next, after establishing controls, yes, formulate a plan. And when you, Adrian, why don't you take us through that? And I'll add anything that stuck out to me that didn't stick out to you.
So that will touch on some of the stuff that we talked about previously, having controls, rules, have different scenarios, understanding where you're going to entry, how much you're willing to lose, really putting pen and paper and just going over everything that you possibly can before initiating a new plan, new strategy, investing. So just going through all that and outlining it. And obviously you can't account for everything, but account for as much as you can, and just ultimately sticking to that. And if it's something that you may not know, adjust the plan ahead of time and see what you can do.
So yes, so with his plan, the couple things that stood out, he had said when you're formulating a plan, it should be where, when, and why you would no longer want the position. So the where he views as the price, the when is the time, and why is if there's any new information. So he's once again suggesting you establish this in advance, prior to buying, because once you buy, you're no longer objective.
Yeah, I think a good way to just use an example as a stock. So the first one you said was price. That was the first one. And
yeah, the first one, the price being where you'd want to enter. So at stock ABC, let's say it's trading at $15, and you say, well, I want to enter at anything below 20, well, then you would buy. If it's trading at 15 and you'd say, I want to enter at anything below 10, then you're not buying now. When is the time? Do you want to do this now? Is this something where whatever your thesis is only going to be valid for the next 6 months? And then, or let's say you bought at that price and your thesis does not come to fruition within the next 6 months. If you're a technical, or if you're looking at more short term, maybe after 6 months you say, I need to get out or reevaluate. And then why would be any new information? So you bought for, using his soybean oil example earlier, you bought because you thought there'd be a drought and then all of a sudden there's rain. Well, do you close the position immediately because there is rain and not a drought? If you're following your rules, that'd probably be the case. And he says in the book that had he done that, one, he wouldn't have lost as much, but two, he thought he would just lose it later because he wasn't following rules. That's what Jim Paul had mentioned in the book. The next thing he talks about is you've got to have this is similar to the where, when, and why, but this is more for getting in. You have got to have an entry price. Once again, that's where you'd want to buy. A stop price, which is an automatic sell potentially. Now, his background is more in the commodity space and more in the trading or speculating space. So once again, to have a stop price and then have a price objective. If it goes to X price, that's when I'd want to sell. So the price objective is how high you want it to go. The stop is at what level of loss or how low it goes that you will close your position.
And this is where we mentioned before, where they're really trying to prioritize telling yourself, how much am I willing to lose on this? Not really focusing on how much I'm going to make, really hammering home the point, because sometimes, I think you mentioned before, people feel the loss is a lot more, twice as much, three times more, whatever the number may be, compared to how much they make. So they're really saying, you know, examine how much you're willing to lose, then consider the other aspects of the investment or trade.
Yep. And once again, do all this before you buy. Before you buy, you do this. A couple other things he had said with formulating a plan. One, profitable trades that miss won't cost you anything. You'll miss an opportunity. Poor controls will cost you a lot of money. Using his book title, you know, Losing $1 Million as an example. He suggests trailing stop orders if you're using technical analysis, or monitor changes in fundamentals if you that you determine is your reason for entry. So trailing stop, let's say you bought that stock A, B, and C at 10, and your target is 15. A trailing stop would say, okay, when it goes from 10 to 12, maybe you put a stop in at 11. That way, if it drops below 12 down to 11, you've still profited $1 per share. Then it goes from 12 to 13, maybe you keep bumping that stop up. So it goes up to 15, now your stop's at 14. So if it drops, you're still profitable. With the fundamental analysis side, let's just say hypothetically your target is you bought it at a price to earnings ratio of 7, and you think it's going to go up to a price to earnings ratio of 10. Well, you can't put a trailing order on that because those orders are just based on what the stock's trading. So you've got to monitor it so you can keep saying, okay, is it up to my target of 10 yet? And when it is, that's when you would look at potentially selling. The last point, Adrian, that you made that he also does that I think is very important and worth repeating, write it down. If you don't write it down, it makes it harder to follow your rules. And if you don't write it down, if the investment or trade goes against you, it's harder to think through, to remember your thought process when you originally got in. So you won't learn as much. And once again, if you accept that losses are a part of investing, you want to make sure you learn from those losses, which is where this book was headed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly right. Just a way to keep you accountable, having those controls in place and just having it there right in front of you can be beneficial.
Yeah, and so we've gone through the five areas. I've got a couple other points I just want to make that don't necessarily line up with them. I'll review the areas again, determine what type of participant you'll be, select a method of analysis, develop rules, establish controls, and formulate a plan. Adrian, do you have any other points, either from the book in general or any other thoughts you've had while reviewing it?
Yeah, I'll just mention a few of them. I mean, one of them that they have too is just the aspect of just being right and just being profitable. That's what they said, two of the rewards that people really look for here, whether their thesis was correct or whether they're making money on it. And those are the two valuable things that people want to go for. And they just said, just be aware of that and just make sure you have those strategies and plans in place, because if you're really just banking on all the times you were right or all the times you were profitable, you might experience the concept as the Midas touch, where everything you're doing just seems to be right. Or where we mentioned before, that could just be dangerous if you don't have strategies and plans in place, because you could just be right, but then it might be building up to a big loss in the future that could just wipe you out.
Yeah, and he talks a lot about focusing on the process versus yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So an example he gives is that if someone asks you, what do you think about the market? Don't personalize it. Answering something like, and his quote is, according to the method of analysis I use and the rules I use to implement the analysis, if the market does thus and such, I'll do this. And what that does is you're not then internalizing it. You're not saying you're right or wrong. It's your method that's right or wrong. And when you take it upon yourself, then your ego's attached to it, which might make it harder for you to buy or sell. There's actually another well-known investor known as Monish Pabrai, who he's done very well. At the average, like 27% returns, phenomenal track record, great investor. And he had presented at the Value Investing Congress, and I believe it was 2 years in a row, and both of the positions he presented went down in value. And he had said, I'm not presenting anymore. I don't know if he's still stuck by this, but he had said once, I'm not presenting anymore at any of these things, because one, he felt tied to the idea. Like if someone else did it, he felt responsible, and he felt like he couldn't objectively make a decision. He couldn't sell because he told other people to buy. And by sell, I mean 6 months, a year down the road, let's just say it doesn't work out. There was something that was making his decision factor not just what's going on with the investment. So at one point, he had said he's no longer presenting ideas for that reason, which I think is very wise. Anything that can cloud your judgment or get in the way of you implementing your investment philosophy, I think is worth eliminating from your process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
A couple other things I had on here that I just thought were worth noting. There's a lot of good stuff in this book, by the way. But one is he says, don't focus on why the market is moving. Focus on what the market's doing. The reason being, and I say market here, but it could be a stock that you're investing. It could be anything. The reason he says this is because if you're looking for a why, you're just going to try to find the why that fits your narrative. So if you are in stock of ABC and it starts going down, if you're trying to find why it's going down, you're going to try to spin that story into a reason it'll go up. Whereas if you just focus on what it's doing, that you can't argue what it's actually done versus trying to create a spin on the why. Another quote that he has that I liked is he had said, disciplined consistency is the key to success in the market once you've developed your rules. And I just really like that phrase, disciplined consistency, because I wholly agree. I think if you're going to be a successful investor, you've got to be disciplined with your plan that you've got, and you've got to be consistent with the execution of that plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with all those points. And just going back to the why one, there's always just a lot of reasons why a stock does something or the market does something. So I definitely agree, just focus on what it's doing is more important, because, you know, sometimes just markets can just be unpredictable. I mean, you can do a lot of research, do a lot of analysis, and everything can point to one direction and the market will just go the opposite direction because of a bunch of different whys. So I definitely agree with that.
Yeah, and there's always a why that will line up with what you're looking for. So when he says that, I truly believe you can find a why for anything. I always used to joke that you know, my sister will be into the horoscope and the zodiac signs, and she would read, you know, what it says gonna happen today. And I said, I still stand by this. I think you can always make it right. You can always say, oh, they said this is gonna happen, and you just find a reason for this to happen. And I think that's a good analogy for what the market is doing. You can find a publication, an analyst, an article, something that's gonna line up with your viewpoint as to why this certain thing happened.
And
today.
Then can you say that other phrase, the discipline consistency? Because I want to respond to that as well. I think that's another good one.
Yeah, so the full sentence is, discipline consistency is the key to success in the markets once you have developed your rules.
Yeah, I think that's just a great one because, again, when it just comes to investing, you're going to get a lot of different experiences, and just being methodical, sticking to the certain strategies and disciplines you have, I think it's just a great way to just keep building on it to make you a better investor, to be profitable. I think that's just something that's very valuable, and it just goes beyond investing and trading, just sticking to and being consistent. They mentioned too, there sometimes can be a lot of trial and error, but that's just okay because you can just add it to your toolbox.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I think you're completely right with what you had just pointed out as well. This is not just investing. Discipline, consistency, I think, is a key to success pretty much in everything. Like the next thing that comes to mind to me is health and fitness, you know, weight loss and eating habits. If you're disciplined and consistent, you can achieve those goals. I can use myself and my failures in this space as an example. I can be disciplined and consistent pretty well Monday through Thursday, and then Friday through Sunday hits and I am not disciplined and not consistent. So all the progress I made Monday through Thursday is out the window. So I think discipline consistency is a very good phrase, and it's a very good theme for success.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, Roshan.
Well, I think this was a great episode for everyone listening. I hope you got a lot from it. I hope this will improve your investment approach, methodology, or get you to develop one if you don't have one already. If you need help in the space, Adrian and I are only a phone call or an email away, and we're happy to help. We'll be back next week with another great episode. Take control and achieve your goals.
Schedule a conversation with Roshan, Adrian, or Eric today at retirementlifestyleshow.com. Roshan and Eric are certified financial planner practitioners. They, along with Adrian, are investment advisor representatives and serve clients across the U.S. with financial planning and investment advice through Arete Wealth. If you found this show helpful, gained knowledge, or enjoyed the time you spent with us, tell your friends and leave us a 5-star review. This will help others discover the show. To access our show notes, to download any of the tools mentioned in today's podcast, to ask us a question, or to schedule a conversation, go to retirementlifestyleshow.com. All opinions expressed by podcast hosts and guests are solely their own. While based on information they believe is reliable, neither Arete Wealth nor its affiliates warrants its completeness or accuracy, nor do their opinions reflect the opinion of Arete Wealth. This podcast is for general informational purposes only and should not be regarded as specific advice or recommendations for any individual. Before making any decisions, consult a professional. The show hosts offer investment advice through Arete Wealth Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor, and securities through Arete Wealth Management, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC, and NFA. Finally, our music is The Chance by Jason Shaw and Audionautics. It's part of the YouTube audio library, and it's licensed under a Creative Commons license. I am Ray Voices. Thank you for listening.